Joshua chapter 11, this is God's Word. And we'll read it from verses to the whole chapter, verse 1 to the end. Hear the Lord now. Then it came about when Jabin, king of Hazor, heard of it, that he sent to Jobab, king of Madon, and to the king of Shimron, and to the king of Akshaph, and to the kings who were of the north in the hill country, and in the Arabah, south of the Chinneroth, and in the lowland on the heights of Dor on the west, to the Canaanite on the east and on the west, and the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Jebusite in the hill country, and the Hivite at the foot of Hermon in the land of Mizpeh. They came out, they and all their armies with them, as many people as the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. So all these kings, having agreed to meet, came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid because of them. For tomorrow at this time I will deliver all of them slain before Israel, and you shall hamstring their horses and burn their chariots with fire." So Joshua and all the people of war with him came upon them suddenly by the waters of Merom and attacked them. The Lord delivered them into the hand of Israel, so that they were defeated. They defeated them and pursued them as far as Great Sidon and Misrephothmaim and the valley of Mizpah to the east. And they struck them until no survivor was left to them. Joshua did to them as the Lord had told him. He hamstrung their horses and burned their chariots with fire. Then Joshua turned back at that time and captured Hazor and struck its king with the sword. For Hazor formerly was the head of all these kingdoms. They struck every person who was in it with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying them. And there was no one left who breathed. And he burned Hazor with fire. Joshua captured all the cities of these kings and all their kings, and he struck them with the edge of the sword and utterly destroyed them, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded. However, Israel did not burn any cities that stood on their mounds, except Hazor alone, which Joshua burned. All the spoil of these cities and the cattle the sons of Israel took as their plunder, but they struck every man with the edge of the sword until they had destroyed them. They left no one who breathed. Just as the Lord had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses. Thus Joshua took all that land, the hill country and all the Negev, all that land of Goshen, the lowland, the Arabah, the hill country of Israel, and its lowland from Mount Helak that rises toward Seir, even as far as Baal Gad in the valley of Lebanon at the foot of Mount Hermon. And he captured all their kings and struck them down and put them to death. Joshua waged war a long time with all these kings. There was not a city which made peace with the sons of Israel except the Hivites living in Gibeon. They took them all in battle. For it was of the Lord to harden their hearts to meet Israel in battle in order that he might utterly destroy them, that they might receive no mercy, but that he might destroy them, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. And Joshua at that time and came at that time and cut off the Anakim from the hill country, from Hebron, from Debir, from Anab, and from all the hill country of Judah, and from all the hill country of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed them with their cities. There were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel, only in Gaza and Gath and in Ashdod some remained. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had spoken to Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their divisions by their tribes. Thus the land had rest from war. And that is God's word. Well, here we conclude Israel's history of the conquest of Canaan. The last chapter we saw the destruction of the southern area of Canaan. And here we see the victory over the northern area. The chapter opens with a long description. five verses of the enemy. That's long compared to most accounts of enemies, the enemies of Israel. Five verses. And verse 4 describes them. They came out, they and all their armies with them, as many people as the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. And so you are to picture as you read through this that there are many people. Thousands upon thousands of people. Too many for Israel to defeat them. What you are supposed to picture is a hopeless cause, a hopeless mission for Israel. They cannot defeat these people. They are outnumbered. The armies are too great. They have too many horses and they have too many chariots. In verse 6, the Lord gives confidence to Joshua, though, in spite of this. He says, "Do not be afraid because of them, for tomorrow at this time I will deliver all of them slain before Israel." If we remember Deuteronomy 20, verse 1, it was given to Israel before they entered the land. And there the Lord said, "When you go out to war against your enemies and you see horses and chariots and an army larger than your own," like what we see here, "you shall not be afraid of them, for the Lord your God is with you, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt." In verse 9, Joshua did to them as the Lord had told him. He hamstrung their horses and burned their chariots with fire. It's interesting that Israel would have, they could have used the horses, they could have used the chariots. But they do exactly as the Lord commands. And they make the horses and the chariots useless. Well, why is that emphasized here? One main reason is that Israel would have to depend on the Lord. That the Lord they would need to know is sufficient. You see, as I was reading through this time, I've read it a couple times now, but as I read through this time, I noticed how many times it says that each one, each person was destroyed. They were slain. It repeats it over and over and over. That they might remember that these were the people who numbered the sand on the seashore, who had many chariots, many horses, and yet they're destroyed. And they don't need horses and they don't need chariots. Not Israel. They need the Lord. And that's what we need. We need to learn, like Israel needed to learn here, that the Lord is sufficient, and He is sufficient. So don't forget that all that you need is the Lord. You can gather as many possessions as you want. You can lay up treasures for yourselves on earth. And you'll say, "Well, I need this to do this. And I need this to accomplish this task and this calling." Remember, before you go to that and buy that possession or get whatever you think you need, just remember this story. That the Lord is sufficient. And all your troubles, the Lord is sufficient. And all of your joys, the Lord is sufficient to give you all the joy in the world that you need. And you see verse 12 at the end, that Joshua did just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded. Verse 15, just as the Lord commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua, and so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses. And so we see two things here in Joshua 11. That we might live as Israel does here, putting our dependence upon the Lord, and He is sufficient in all things, but also that we might follow the Lord in perfect obedience. That's what the Lord is calling us to here in Joshua 11. Dependence upon Him and perfect obedience.